to you by the Jonas Podcasting Network, found exclusively at wrestlingwithjonas.com. Hello, we are live once again, second live interview in the space of 24 hours, but Monday afternoon, very rare that we do anything as early as this, but there's a good reason behind it, and I've got an awesome guest live with me today for episode 346, none other than the current BWR heavyweight champion, the current title heavyweight champion, one half of the United Wrestling Tag Team Champions, the bastard child of British wrestling, Scotty Rourke. Scotty, this has been a couple of years in the making, and I love the balloons there, but how the devil are you?
I'm absolutely wonderful, mate. How are you? It sounds like you've had a hectic 24 hours.
Oh, busy. I think it's my third live interview in the space of 4 or 5 days, but we'll talk about all of that. But tonight, it's all about Scotty Rourke, of course. But just a quick reminder, we are live, of course, across Facebook Live, Twitch, X, and YouTube. So go and give us a like, subscribe and a follow. But more importantly, if you want to get in touch with the show, you can do. Get in touch with the show. Send your questions through over the next 60 minutes or so to Scotty Rourke. We'll do our very best over the course of this interview to bring your questions up live on air. But just a quick reminder of some of my recent guests, as if Scotty Rourke isn't enough, just to entice you to hit that like, follow and subscribe button. A recent guest that came onto the Wrestling with Jonas podcast in January, as a matter of fact, somebody that Scotty might know very, very well, the current BWR Cruiserweight champion, Miles, came and joined me live in January, as well as the Deadly One herself, Nightshade, joined me in January. Recent interviews, last Thursday, as a matter of fact, Jay Joshua, what a massive breakout year in 2023, doing some incredible things all over the UK. Current IWN Z Force champion, or is it Z Force champion? One of those. The current No Mercy Wrestling heavyweight champion joined me last week. Please go and check that one out. And as I've just alluded to, I spoke to Heidi Katrina live. She rejoined me about 2.5 years after being a live guest on my show last night, just 24 hours removed from becoming the very first Slam Wrestling Finland women's champion, the very first women's champion to be crowned in the country of Finland. We had a good 10 or 15 minute chat there. Next week, I've got an awesome guest lined up. Alexis Falcon joins me on the 20th. Please make sure that you set the reminder, set your clocks for that one. And on the 4th of March, I've got none other than Eddie Dennis joining me, 4th of March. All of these interviews live on Wrestling with Jonas. But today, it's all about this guy here. And Scotty, like I say, it's wonderful to have you on the show. But like I say, I listed those accolades during the intro. Title heavyweight champion, BWR heavyweight champion, one half of the United Tag Team Champions. Not only does that have a great ring to it, Scotty, but it must feel like some justification for you and all of your hard work, the grind that you've put in over the last couple of years.
Absolutely. I mean, it's been a hell of a graft. And at the minute, to hold all three of those titles, it means a hell of a lot. So to be able to go and legitimize two of those championships as recognized world titles by defending them overseas. So technically, the BWR World Champion, as it was defended in Poland a couple of weeks ago, and the United World Tag Team Champions, as we defended those in France in December. So, it seems like it's kind of my shtick right now, just legitimizing belts wherever I go.
Absolutely. And let's just bring up some pictures, because the gold is pretty awesome, my friend. And there's yourself there with the BWR World Heavyweight title over your left shoulder, the title championship in your right hand, and then, of course, the United World Tag Team Championship around your waist. And they all look pretty smart on you, my friend. But let me ask you, you know, it's really interesting to me that now you're representing groups such as BWR, Tidal, as their main champion, as their top guy. You're now being recognised by those groups and many other groups that you perform for as like their main event talent, as you know, as their top man, as their top guy. What do you think the change has been over the last 12 months, certainly, to kind of for them to now see you as their top guy and put you in these awesome positions, these main event positions, putting their championships on you? Is this something that you've done differently consciously over the last 12 months to kind of get yourself into that position? Or is it that these companies have finally woken up to how bloody awesome you've been all these years?
I think, to be perfectly honest, it just takes one platform. And if you nail it, if you kill it, if you knock it out of the park and you show that you can hang with not only some of the best in the UK, but some of the best in the world, it almost makes people take you seriously a little bit, because, like, obviously, like, I can do a super, super fast-paced fireworks banger style opener. I can do tag matches. I can do intergender matches. And I am currently on my main event shit. So it's nice to be recognized, and it's nice to, like, have companies put me in that position, because they know that I can do the job that they're asking me to do. And it's like I say, there's a fine line between sort of confidence and cockiness. And I'm more than confident in my ability, but I like to think that there's less arrogance with it. And it's just a case of, like, I am just good at what I do.
Oh, 100%, 100%. And look, so I first saw you perform for TNT in 2021, and I think it was their Extreme Field show, which I'm sure you remember fondly, because it was a mixture of rock music upstairs, pro wrestling downstairs. There was yourself, Robbie X, and Nico Angelo in that triple threat match for the Ultra X Championship. And you like I say, no different in 2021 compared to how you are today. So you've certainly, I don't think you've really changed an awful lot in that time to kind of, you know, change your fortune, so to speak.
I mean, or have you? Always wanted to perform authentically, organically, because I genuinely think that there is definitely something to be said that real recognizes real, and sort of the more genuine you can come across, like, as a performer, the more that will sort of resonate with real people. And that's the fans, that's the fan base that we're building, and that's the people attending shows, that's the people that see me what I do online, that's the people that tune into things like this. It really is a case of, like, wrestling as my authentic self. But I do think I've evolved a hell of a lot as a performer in the last couple of years. Obviously, coming out of COVID 2021, very, very grateful for the opportunities and the chances people took on me. But if it wasn't for matches, as you say, the matches that I had at TNT, the matches that I had at BWR, the matches that I was having sort of just coming out of COVID, as almost the start of my singles career, I definitely would not be where I am now. And I think there's definitely a lot to be said in the sense of where I've come from, where I've been, and where I am.
Yeah, 100%. And as you alluded to earlier, I think one of the biggest kind of highlights is that you've now gone international. And I'll check back through the record books, and I couldn't see Scotty Rourke having left the UK up until last year. I think it was December when you had your first outing. You mentioned it earlier when yourself and Kira, the Dog's Bollocks, ventured over to France for Rick's Catch and defended your United tag team titles against Charles Crowley and Alexis Falcon. So, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but that was your first gig abroad, wasn't it? Or certainly your first wrestling show abroad.
It was. So I set my goal last year, like my sort of more for me and for branching out and reaching that sort of that next step, that next level. My goal last year was to debut for RevPro and to wrestle abroad. And I managed to do both of those things. I debuted for RevPro in November and had my first abroad booking in December. So it was cutting it fine, but we certainly ticked those off the list. And yeah, making the Dog's Bollocks international, legitimizing those tag belts as overseas titles and recognized as world championships against two of the hardest working and most credible intergender tag teams that this country has to offer. Alexis Falcon and Charles Crowley certainly are cheeky little buggers. And we had a hell of a match over there at Rick's. So I can't thank Rick's Catch enough for having us over there. It was a hell of an experience. It was so good.
Absolutely. And like I say, probably quite an emotional occasion for yourself making your international debut, and for Kira, like I say, defending her tag team gold alongside yourself in her home country. But we'll talk a bit more about the dog's bollocks in a moment. But more recently, you've performed over in Poland. Now, until I was doing research on yourself, I didn't fully realise that Poland had such a thriving wrestling scene, to be honest with you. But they held this recent pay-per-view, didn't they, called Gold Rush for Prime Time Wrestling. Like I say, it was very well attended. It's an absolutely stacked card with talent from all over the world. Before we talk about your opponent and the match, like I say, getting the invite to perform for Prime Time Wrestling over in Poland, how did you feel when the invite first came through?
It was amazing, honestly. As I say, sort of, I'd just cashed in the Anarchy briefcase. I'd just won the BWR, what was at the time the BWR Heavyweight Championship. A few days later, we were in talks with Primetime Wrestling about going over there and defending the BWR Championship. So again, in my head, I was like, this is incredible. I get to represent not only my hometown promotion, the promotion that I've been with since day dot, the promotion that I've helped build with my own bare hands from the get-go, sort of almost 7 years ago now. And without BWR, I 100% would not be where I am today. Like, without BWR, I don't think I'd be a wrestler. I don't think I'd be at all in existence as Scotty Rourke. So it was almost, it was very emotional, and it was almost overwhelming to be in talks with another country that had recognised the product that we built at British Wrestling Revolution. And then again, on the back of that, to be able to go over there and legitimise the BWR Championship as a world title, it's adding more sort of more notches to the belt, and it's adding more credibility to Scotty Rourke, to BWR, yeah, to championships. It's insane. Life's insane, and I wouldn't have it any other way. It truly is real life rock star shit.
It really is. And you look, so I'm just going to bring this picture. There you are with the BWR World Heavyweight Championship now in the Anarchy briefcase. But let's talk about the match, because you were defending your BWR Championship over there against international indie talent, international superstar, Mike Speedball Bailey. Now, I mean, that must have been a bit of a bucket list name that you've wanted to tick off for a hell of a long time. Did you fall off your chair when you found out you were going to be going up against Speedball?
I was blown away. So not only did they want to fly me out there to have me perform on their show because they'd seen my work, and they'd seen sort of BWR as a company and wanted me to go out there and represent the boys, the team, and my home. But then to put me in such a high caliber match felt absolutely incredible. And for anyone that does know me, or for anyone that has spoken to me, they will know, like, hand on heart, I have always been a TNA kid, because it was always a Saturday afternoon at my grand's house. Between like Pimp My Ride and Dog the Bounty Hunter, there was TNA. So to go up against a former multi-time Impact X Division champion, and X Division when I was a kid was the dog's bollocks. So to go up against Speedball, it blew my mind.
Yeah, 100%. And I know that both of you are super smooth in the ring, super fluid, can pretty much, you know, demonstrate any style in the ring. But what was it like to go in there with the guy? Did he surprise you at all with, not necessarily how good he was, but I'm guessing the chemistry between the two of you was off the charts?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I turned up at the venue, I think, I played a show the night before with my band, Intercity. So then I drove through the night to Stansted. I think I slept for about 2 hours on the plane, turned up to the venue, did all the pre-show meetings, the pre-show amblings, and the meet and greets and things like that. So I'd had about 2 hours sleep before going out there and absolutely killing it in the opener with Speedball. But sort of post-match, we spoke, and he was very, very complimentary on my style, on my in-ring sort of craft, the way I move, the way I carry myself. And he asked me, he said, have you got any martial arts training? Have you got a martial arts background? Because some of your strikes are very, very strong, very, very solid, and the technique is second to none. So we got talking about martial arts, and I knew that obviously Speedball had a big martial arts background, but he spoke to me and said that he was a fourth Dan black belt. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And then he was like, what's your background with martial arts? And I was like, oh, I'm a first Dan black belt in Jeet Kune Do, which is Bruce Lee's teachings, Bruce Lee's syllabus. Yeah. It's a little bit mixed martial arts. It takes elements of every syllabus that's out there. There's elements of sort of karate, taekwondo, aikido, eskrima, bagua. There's so much that falls under Jeet Kune Do and Bruce Lee's teachings, Bruce Lee's stylings. And I think as soon as I said that I'd studied and worked under that sort of syllabus, there was a big grin on Speedball's face and almost like a bit of a nod of approval.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm sure that helped matters in the ring as well. He just kind of trusted you even more after that. But you're going international again pretty soon. And I think March the 9th is the date. And this time it's a different country. You've been over to France, been over to Poland now, but Italy, Milan will be your next port of call outside of these shores for MWF, if I'm not mistaken, in just a few weeks' time. You must be looking forward to that.
Absolutely. At this point, I'm so excited to go out and explore new countries, new places, try new food, meet new people, see what makes other people tick, what makes other cultures tick. And yeah, I feel like I'm out there sort of collecting belts, collecting flags. It's great.
Bringing back lots of cool souvenirs as well. But let's jump to now. This won't come up with his name, but I've checked Facebook, and Simon I Will Burn Art Herring is watching live. It says Poland is no Grimsby Memorial Hall, though, is it?
As I say, Memorial Hall has such a history with wrestling. So I Will Burn Art is the photographer that works at BWR. He works all over the country. He absolutely kills it. And he's a super, super, super talented photographer, but also a really nice guy. And I think, again, if you surround yourself with the right kind of people, if you surround yourself with not only talented folk, but people that keep you down to earth, keep you grounded, and sort of appreciate what we do, what they do, and the opportunities that we all get given for the platforms that we're granted, it's super humbling, and it makes the team bond even stronger. But a little bit about the history of the Memorial Hall. So
go on. Yeah.
When BWR first asked to run the Memorial Hall, they wanted no part of it whatsoever. They hadn't had wrestling at the Memorial Hall since, I think, 1991, so almost 30 years previous. And people like the British Bulldog, people like Bret Hart, Big Daddy, Giant Haystacks, all these huge names have wrestled in Cleethorpes Memorial Hall. So it has a little bit of heritage. But the reason that they stopped running shows or allowing wrestling within the venue was because there was some old man in the front row sort of giving some shtick to, you know, the bad guys at the time. I don't know who it was, but they're giving some shtick to the bad guys at the time, and the bad guy was doing bad guy things and going out and giving the crowd some jip and all the rest of it, and got in this old man's face, and this old man had a heart attack.
No.
Yeah. So they were like, right, no more wrestling in the Memorial Hall. Absolutely not. And then obviously they'd seen the work that we'd done previously with BWR and the brand that we'd built. I mean, we moved from a small rugby club venue to the upstairs of like a working man's club, sort of old-timey bar that felt like we were stuck in the 70s, to then running the Memorial Hall. And we just got bigger and better. And as I say, the Memorial Hall took a big gamble on us bringing wrestling back to that venue, and it's been home ever since.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we've still got people sending in questions. As a fascinating story, poor guy. I wonder who it was that was giving him jip. We'll have to look back through the record books and figure that one out. But let me ask you about United Wrestling now, because that's probably the place in 2023 where I've seen you perform the most. And, you know, I've just got to say kind of one name, and that's Kira Kimura. And I think you had three Match of the Year contender matches last year for United Wrestling. I think the first one was in about February. The next one was in, I think, when was it? Sometime in the summertime, maybe August, September. And then you had your final one at their Monster Bash 2 show in October. Three tremendous matches, but not just three tremendous Match of the Year contenders, but what many people and certainly United fans are calling Feud of the Year. And certainly in my book, I think I've said to many people, it was my Feud of the Year for sure. Tell us a little bit about getting involved with United Wrestling, because was your first match against Kira last February?
Yeah. So
go on, tell me about it.
I'm a bastard for not checking my emails. That's one thing that I've learned since this experience, to regularly check emails. So I'd reached out to United. I'd said that I loved the product. I loved the fact that they were teaming up with a brewery, the Tap Social.
Yeah.
It felt very much up my street. It felt very punk rock. It felt very DIY. It felt very sort of hardcore scene. Do everything yourself and build it from the ground up. And that's the sort of scene that, you know, I grew up in. I thrive in musically, wrestling, whatever you want to talk about. So I received an email from United, I think maybe 3 or 4 days before the show where Kira was meant to wrestle Aluna Blue. And they'd reached out to me a few days before and asked me if I was available to go and take the slot of Aluna Blue. And me being me, hadn't checked my emails, hadn't had a look. And I think it was only maybe 2 days before the show that I checked and was like, oh, shit, yeah, absolutely. Like, if the spot's still there, I will take it. I'll bite your hand off for it. Absolutely. I want to be there. I'd seen some of the stuff that Kira had done coming out of COVID and was super, super impressed. I think me and Kira had a little bit of a chat sort of in the past about sort of mental health and things like that, and mental health within sports and mental health within wrestling. So we had a little bit of a rapport, but it wasn't until sort of turning up and meeting her properly and then wrestling her to realise what a badass she was. Like, Kira is a hell of a lass. Like, she hits hard. She means everything that she says. And I don't know. I think there's something aggressive about the French accent, especially when you've got Kira shouting in your face. And it's I feel like it unlocked something inside me. And we gave as good as we got, but it was my first experience in intergender. I know some people think that's a dirty word, but I think the more we sort of move forward and the more we progress as a sport, as a performance, the more doors we'll see open for, you know, once we step between the ropes, people need to realise that we're all wrestlers, we're all professionals.
Yeah. Shall I tell you something pretty cool, a cool fact, and I like doing this on Wrestling with Johns, but that first match between yourself and Kira Kimura happened a year ago today.
No.
A year ago today, 12th of February 2023. And I mean, I watched that first match back yesterday in preparation for this, and it was pretty cool. I think she came out first, if I'm not mistaken. You came out second, and you pointed across the ring and said, it's like that Spider-Man meme. But I think just there, straight away, you knew it, the fans knew it, Kira knew it, the chemistry between the two of you in that first match and the subsequent matches, the second and the third match, was just off the chain. Oh, I think we've temporarily lost Scotty Rourke there. You still there, Scotty?
Yeah, we're back. It was a slight buffer.
That's all right. But, you know, the chemistry between the two of you, I think, was evident from that very first second before the bell even rang. And you must have felt it as well.
Yeah, completely. And as you say, it was a hell of a story spread across three shows, spread across months and months of build, months and months of sort of trash talk. And as I say, hitting each other as hard as we could and hoping to God that the next person wouldn't get up, you know what I mean? So it was really sort of waiting for someone else to yield and call it and just lay down and just call it quits. But every time I hit Kira would hit me harder. I'd hit her harder. And it really was like a battle of willpower, mental as well as physical. But then speaking to Kira, obviously, post those three matches where we decided to come together and form a tag team, I didn't quite realise how much those matches had meant to Kira. So speaking, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn to say that Kira had kind of reached a point where she'd almost given up on wrestling. She was really sort of downhearted on the scene, on herself, and was ready to call it quits and be like, you know what, maybe this isn't for me. Maybe the British wrestling scene isn't really where I belong. And it wasn't, as I say, until these are her words, until Wrestling Me, that she was like, you know what, I am meant to be here, and Scotty's brought the best out of me, and I think we bring really good shit out of each other. So it was quite emotional to receive those messages, read them, and be like, oh, like, yeah. Not only is this, I guess, a work colleague, but like an actual friendship, and we've created some kind of like mental, emotional bond, and also the bond of being tied together by a chain, the bond of hitting each other harder than we'd ever been hit before.
Yeah, absolutely. And I had Kira on the show just a few months ago, back in November, after the chain match. And, you know, we spoke about after each of them three matches, I was upstairs, backstage, and she was very, very emotional. And she said she'd never felt like that. She'd never cried after a match, except for the matches she had with you, because they meant so much to her. She even cried during our interview on Wrestling with Jonas, because that's how much that their matches, that feud, that partnership, and that kind of bondship with yourself meant to her. You alluded to it there, the chain match, the third and final match. You were all square at one match apiece, and then the deciding match was at United's Halloween show at the back end of October last year. I've got a video now. This is from my vantage point, but just take a look at this. Now, when I spoke to Kira on the show in November, she legit told me she thought she'd killed you. She thought that Scotty Rourke was a goner. But, I mean, tell us a bit about that spot. Obviously, I'm guessing that you discussed it before the match, but actually executing it, was it different to you imagined?
Just watching it back, knowing how much it sucked, hearing the noise, what a stupid lad I was.
That's what adrenaline does to you, man. But it's there for the taking, isn't it? It's there for the taking. You know, that balcony.
But like I say, it got to the point within the match where we'd kicked the shit out of each other, and like, pardon my French, but honestly, we took each other to the limits every single time we stepped across that ring from each other. And that match was something else. I'd never had a chain match before. I'd say it's one of the biggest sort of feud that I'd experienced in my career. It really, really felt like a big deal grudge match. So the harder I was hitting her, I was really bringing it to her, and she just wasn't staying down. So I knew I had to scale things up. I knew I had to go hard or go home, you know what I mean? So as I'm climbing up there, obviously my intention is she's not staying down from what I'm bringing to her. So I've got to go big. I've got to go big. This is my exclamation point. And if this lands, Kira's done. And obviously, from that angle, it took me just too long to get up onto that balcony for Kira to work her way back up to her feet, see me up there, and the cogs start turning. I felt the tension on the chain, and I was like, oh, man, I've messed up here. And then, obviously, the big pull, I come crashing down, and honestly, it's one that I felt for a while.
I mean, you landed pretty perfectly, to be honest with you, you know. But, I don't think many people would volunteer to take that sort of bump.
No, there's no two ways about it. It was a you're coming down, and I was like, oh God.
We got to Danny Williams watching us live via Facebook. Now, his name won't come up, but I've checked on Facebook. Danny Williams says, few people had a better 2023 than Scotty Rourke. What a treat watching Scotty at United. And I think you may have already answered this, but he's asking your favourite memory of last year down in Oxford for United.
I'm glad you've asked favourite memory and not favourite match. I think my favourite memory, my favourite moment was coming to the ring with Kira by my side for the first time. Obviously, the feud that had been built, the way that we'd, like, the sort of the battles we'd had in that ring, in that venue, Tap Social in Oxford, I think, now will hold a very, very special place in my heart. The birthplace of the Dog's Bollocks, and the tag name that me and Kira decided on being the Dog's Bollocks actually came from one of their shows. So they have a show called the Mutt's Nuts.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, we can spin off that. So it's a very, very United sort of influenced tag that me and Kira have because of the backstory that we have at that promotion. So yeah, I think my favourite memory would be coming to the ring with Kira that first time through the bar and then walking away the United, now World Tag Team Champions.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I just want to throw out a quick shout out to the Odyssey, because they were fantastic fighting tag team champions of United and really kind of set the bar very high. And Artemis, unfortunately, was not present during that championship match. I think, was it Josh Folds that kind of stepped in on the 11th hour there? But I think you got a match lined up for March the 10th, the day after you get back from Milan, against Harley Hudson and Lindsay Evo. So I'll be there eagerly looking forward to that one. Let's talk a bit about Tidal Wrestling, though, because I think you've only been their champion since about October now. But say Tidal
first.
Was it October the 1st?
Yeah.
There we go. And, you know, I think you had a few matches with Tidal, maybe kind of 2019, kind of early doors. But you've been a regular for them, certainly in 2023. You had a journey, fantastic matches against Ace Matthews, Vucic, and more recently defending your championship against Tate Mayfairs.
He's not going to like that you stumbled on his name there.
Sorry. Well, you know, but me and Tate have had, crosswords in the past, but never mind. He doesn't like me anyway. Never mind. But let me ask you a bit about your journey with Tidal, because they've put you in some awesome storylines, some fantastic opponents, giving you some great opportunities. Like I said, we've got another match to look forward to just around the corner. But so far, a fantastic journey for Scotty Rourke in Tidal.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think I've become a little bit of a staple point of Parrish. I've what I like to call, I've got my own little fan base there in what I like to call Greb Corner. So big shouts to Jim and to Evan and all the team over there that bring signs, buy merch, come to every single show. But yeah, I think Scotty Roark's become quite a big staple point of Tidal in Huddersfield. Yeah, you touched on, I wrestled a little bit for Tidal pre-COVID.
Yeah.
I did a couple of Temple of Boom. I did one at the Leeds Museum. But now that Tidal has had this shift and isn't just about matchmaking and is more about actually producing good quality shows with storylines and a good product, I think there's definitely a shift in the right direction. And the numbers say it for them, you know what I mean? So like, I think since being at the Parish over this last year or so, the crowds have almost doubled because people are invested, people are buying in, people are buying into the product, to the wrestlers, to the stories that Tidal are putting out there. So yeah, it's been a journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I hosted the latest Tidal Wrestling preview show just shy of a week ago, and it's myself, Taj, and Mad Dog, and we like to have our guests on the Tidal preview show. One of the guests was Dara Diablo. Now, he is your opponent for your second title defence on February the 24th from the now sold-out New Cross Inn in London, which is always great news. But here's a couple of words that Dara had in particular for yourself or about you. Here we go.
Kind of it, really. It's kind of what does my head in about new management here, Mad Dog, Taj. You know, you've come in and you're bringing a whole load of new faces, guys from down south or whatever, people we don't know, new lads, and I don't know their credibility. None of the lads have seen their credibility. You just bring them in because whatever, your mates or you've seen them down south, and you expect us to just roll over and let it happen. Scotty's a perfect case. And, you know, I've got a lot of respect for the lad, and he has proved himself in a certain way. But he skipped the queue, didn't he? Shut up, Mad Dog, right?
So some strong words there from Dara Diablo. He says on one hand he's got respect for you, but then he's saying you skip the queue. And I think Dara's has got a bit of a chip on his shoulder because he hasn't won a title since 2015. Any thoughts on what Dara had to say and looking ahead to your match with Dara Diablo on February the 24th?
I get it. Old and bitter at the new generation, at the new up-and-comers, the new guys that are headlining shows, the new guys that are taking championships, the new guys that are proving themselves as not only some of the best in the country, but some of the best in the world. And I think Dara's main concern is that people are forgetting about him, that he's been left in the past. But you've got to change things up. You can't stagnate. You can't get stale. You've got to change things up to stay relevant. And unfortunately for Dara, obviously, he was out injured for a very long time. And he came back with a bang. He came back with an absolute wallop. I mean, as I say, me and Dara have a coloured history at BWR. So we're no strangers to each other. As for skipping the queue, I strongly, strongly disagree. I'll choose my words very carefully there because... I worked my way up. I faced Ace Matthews as the champion. I drew blood from Ace Matthews as the champion in a main event, in a title match. And before I could get the pin, I had Vusik wrapping himself around my neck. So I had to close business there with Vusik before then coming back to take the championship from Ace. And I mean, Ace will do anything to worm his way out of any kind of confrontation, any kind of situation where he thinks that he hasn't got the upper hand. So it's a very, very smart move, but not necessarily one that you can hold your head up high with. Although, you know, Ace may recall something different in that instance. But I'm looking forward to crossing paths with Dara again. He seems angry. He seems fiery. And that's what I want. I want people to bring me their best. I want people to have a problem with me when they step in the ring with me because I want people to show me what they've got. I want people to show me what they can do. I want people to hit me hard just so I can sort of take that moment, taste a little bit and hit them twice as hard back, you know? Funny thing about Dara, when we talk about the extensive career of Dara Diablo. So this will be my 10th year as a professional wrestler. I started training and made my debut. What year are we? 2024. I made my debut in November 2014. So this will be my 10th year within wrestling, and the school that I was at the time, the promotion that was putting shows on and giving some of the academy lads an opportunity for, they liked to mess with us a little bit. They liked to toy with us. So I think I was working either the raffle or working the door or working merch or something. I wasn't on the show at that point, but there was a Drew McDonald Memorial show back in, I think, maybe 2015. And Dara Diablo was on the cards. Now, I'd seen Dara wrestle before, but I'd never met him. And our coach, the promoter, whatever you'd like to call him at the time, told all of the students that it was such an honour, such a privilege to have Dara Diablo on our show, because he was the biggest import that we had at that time. Told us that Dara was Mexican, and backstage told Dara not to drop the act. So I spent a very, very long time believing Dara Diablo was Mexican. Young, naive, Scotty Rourke back a decade ago. And now to be going full circle and obviously working with Dara multiple times, as I say, a coloured history at BWR and what's about to be a coloured history at Tidal, knowing that we are just two scrappy northern lads that are scratching and clawing for opportunities to carve our name into the British scene. I've got a lot of respect for the dude, but I don't quite understand what his problem is. I think he needs to get with the time, get with the now.
Yeah, he's certainly got a chip on his shoulder. And he's certainly got the moustache to pull off a Mexican, but he's just missing the poncho and the hat, of course. But I neglected to bring up some pictures earlier, and I really want to bring these up. Some pictures of yourself with Kira after just winning the United Tag Team Championships. And, of course, Kira's also been by your side at one or two BWR shows. Talk to me a little. You mentioned earlier that BWR has been kind of fundamental in your early career, not just being their heavyweight world champion in 2024, but kind of back in the early days, certainly cutting your teeth, you know, learning the ropes with BWR. What are some of your kind of memories as far as some of your learning curves or some of your light bulb moments back in the early days that maybe started to kind of make you, you know, wake up to the business and understand it a bit better?
I think knowing what we went through in Grimsby in regards to the old promotion, the old coach, the old school, we were kind of left deflated. We were left hungry, and there was a lot of Grimsby trainees or Grimsby workers that were kind of here like, we know there's a scene, we know there's a fan base, and it's just kind of been abandoned. It's just kind of been forgotten about. And we were kind of all sat there thinking, what's next? So we decided to band together, pull our heads out of our asses, and we created what the brand is today, British Wrestling Revolution, because we truly... Yeah. Believed that we were going to revolutionise the British scene, and now to know that BWR is held in such high regards as one of the top promotions, not only in the north but in the country, is incredible. I think that's a testament to the work that we've put in, and we've consistently sold out, I'd say, 90% of shows for coming up to 7 years. I think, as you say, some of the key moments in my history or in BWR's history was things like, for our year anniversary, we had Pete Dunne. And Pete Dunne at the time was NXT UK champion. So being able to sort of pick his brain a little bit, talk to him about his journey and where he's come from, was a really, really cool experience. And being able to wrestle on the same card as Pete Dunne was crazy for me back in the day. Like, as I say, that's 7 years ago now, so I'd have been 19. And then whilst being at university, I was at uni in Liverpool. I know we mentioned TNT and stuff, but I was actually training whilst at university at the Fighting Spirit School. So that was James Drake and Zach Gibson, Grizzled Young Vets. Now, at the time, I was BWR Tag Team Champion. And BWR really, really put the ball in my hands and allowed me to run with it in regards to bringing GYV over. And again, at the time, they were NXT UK Tag Team Champions. So we had BWR Tag Team Championship versus NXT UK Tag Team Championship.
Wow.
And being able to wrestle not only lads of that caliber, like Zach and JD are undoubtedly, I would say, the best tag team in the world. Maybe I'm a little bit biased, but they were incredible coaches and incredible opponents. So to be able to have that match, as I say, against lads of that caliber was such an opportunity for me, but it was also like a teacher versus student moment as well. And it was proving to myself that, you know, I did belong and I could hang with the best of them. And then since then, it's been strength after strength. I became the BWR Cruiserweight Champion after COVID. And then lost that to Leon Slater. And what a credible opponent to lose that belt to. I mean, Leon has just been signed with TNA. So I'm not going to turn around and say that the lad doesn't deserve the BWR Cruiserweight Championship, because he truly, truly does. I think currently Leon Slater is getting his flowers because he really does deserve it. I think he was unsung for so long and flew under the radar for so long, and now people have taken notice of him, and I'm so happy for Leon in that sense.
And he's super humble as well. Super
he
humble.
He does deserve it. Yeah, absolutely. Such a nice guy. Such a sound lad. And someone that I would consider a friendly face at a show. Someone that I can go up to and talk to. Someone that I can go and get food with. You know what I mean? It's lush to see, and it's so nice to see him getting that opportunity. And then from that, winning the Anarchy Briefcase, cashing in the Anarchy Briefcase and winning the world title and everything that has represented, everything that has done for not only BWR, but Scotty Rourke, being able to sort of shake the shackles of, you know, happy, clappy, double fist pump, let's go, baby face, and being able to show that I mean business, being able to show that it's not necessarily about the friends that you make. It's about being able to do the job at hand. I've been able to establish a grittier edge to Scotty Rourke, and people have had their heads turned by it. So people are taking notice that, you know, I've almost become a little bit of a mercenary across the British Indies right now. Like I go and take out people that need taking out. Anyone that stands across the ring will testify that no one hits like Scotty Rourke. No one has a mindset like Scotty Rourke. And if anyone doubts that, they're a fool.
Yeah. Let me ask you, I know we had a brief chat about this before we went live, but a bit about the Scotty Rourke persona, gimmick, character. And I was thinking to myself, well, you know, I've seen the guy outside of the ring, I've seen the guy inside of the ring, and there isn't an awful lot of difference. And when I introduced you as the bastard child of British wrestling. You've also gone by, you know, the lost boy of professional wrestling. But I mean, in your head, what does the character Scotty Rourke mean? And is there much of a difference between yourself outside of the ring and inside of the ring? I mean, I've got a feeling that you're so fluid and, you know, so at home in the ring because you're just yourself.
Yeah, I think you summed it up quite well there. I think Scotty Rourke, how he presents himself, how he wrestles, how he performs, is just authentic me dialed up. And I've heard many, many people say that some of the best characters within wrestling have been their authentic selves dialed up to 11, dialed up to 12. I'm dialed up to 13, man. Like, there is no question in my mind that I am performing as my most authentic self. It's been a hell of a journey in regards to self-discovery, self-love, self-acceptance, because I did have my demons. I speak quite openly about mental health, what that means to me, the struggles that I've had, the conditions that I've been diagnosed with, and my sort of backstory. And I'm now at a point where I can positively put back into the community what I was taking out at the time in regards to I needed the support. So I was taking a lot from my friends, my family, from the scene. And my way of giving back in day to day, I'm a mental health first aid instructor. So I go out and deliver courses and educate people on the importance of mental health awareness and safety and mental health first aid. So it's been a hell of a journey in regards to, as I say, self-love, self-acceptance and self-care, really. But what I have learned is I'm not the problem, but I can be. You know what I mean? So I'm not necessarily the bad guy or to blame or the person that has got in. Like, I'm not necessarily a bad person, but sometimes I can be my own worst nightmare. And to expel that outwards and be able to sort of be my opponent's worst nightmare at times has been a blessing. It's channeling that energy into different areas. It is almost mental warfare at times, you know. But yeah, I do feel like right now, Scotty Rourke, the bastard child of British wrestling, I was lost. I was the lost boy, and I felt like I was waiting for something, climbing and climbing and climbing to sort of no avail. And now I have reached the top of my game, and I'm firing on all cylinders, and I can be everyone's problem, you know? I am the bastard child of British wrestling, and I am my authentic self, and I think that shines through. Real recognizes real. And the more genuine you can portray yourself, the more genuine you can come across, the more you open yourselves up to connecting with a fan base, with an audience.
Yeah, absolutely love it. As we start to wind down this episode of Wrestling with John, I've got to ask you about your band, Intercity, because I'm not sure how long the band has been together for, but you recently kind of performed or featured at the BBC, didn't you? BBC Music and the Introducing Live Lounge sessions for the best unsigned bands. Now, I think this was possibly last month, if I'm not mistaken, but some awesome exposure to have the opportunity to be part of that. And to have the opportunity to perform on that. I think you performed three of your tracks. Really, things really seem to be going kind of in a good direction for Intercity, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, as I say, when I mentioned that I'm firing on all cylinders, and when I mentioned that what I'm doing right now, this is rock star shit, I'm not messing around. So Intercity has been a band since 2017. We put out our first single, played our first couple of shows in 2017. From then, we released an EP in 2018. We put out a couple of tracks in 2019, and then it all came to a halt. Sort of personal differences with everyone in the band, and as I say, my struggles with my own mental health were really taking a toll on the relationships that I had that were close to me. So I was living with the guitarist at the time, and when I was going through some of my rougher patches, I, hand on heart, understand that I was not an easy person to be around with, let alone live with, you know what I mean? So we kind of imploded a little bit in 2019, and then COVID hit, and then it was recovery and everything after COVID, and that's where sort of wrestling picked up. And it wasn't until last year that myself, the guitarist, Jack Norman is the guitarist that I lived with for a while. Bass player Lewis Hay and drummer JJ Folds. Like, we all came back together and we were like, you know what? We used to do some really cool stuff and we all miss it. So rather than the rigmarole of, you know, starting a fresh band, starting something new and going step by step, sort of colour by numbers, back to the basics, we should bring the band back together and we should capitalise on the cool stuff that we had done and the plans that we put in place and the movements that we made afterwards have been awesome. Honestly, as I say, we released Antidote last year and it's had, I think, close to 10,000 streams now, which is insane. It was featured on BBC Radio 1, the Future Alternative show. And I mean, that show is where bands like Bring Me the Horizon and Nova Twins and things blew up from that sort of BBC Radio 1 show. So big shouts to Nels Hilton for helping us out and getting us on that. And then, yeah, that coincidentally ran side by side with BBC Humberside, where we performed a live lounge before one of our biggest shows to date, which ties in nicely because that was the show that we played before I flew to Poland. It really is all systems go right now, and there's some exciting stuff in the pipeline coming up.
Absolutely. 2024 is going to be a banger of a year, not just in the wrestling ring, but with your band Intercity. Now, we've had a few people get in touch now. Taj, the owner of Tidal's, watching us live via Facebook, and has asked a whole load of questions there, but I'm going to focus on the top one there. If you could play any festival, which would it be and why? So any festival with your band Intercity.
I'm a Download kid. I always have been. It was always, for me, Download over Sonisphere, Download over Bloodstock. I've made so many close friends that have followed me through life at Download Festival, and I've got so many happy memories at Download. And for me, at one point, that was my holiday. Like, I'd go and get piss drunk in a muddy field for 5 days and write off the world and write myself off, if I'm perfectly honest. but no, if we could play Download, for me, that'd be a monumentous occasion.
Absolutely. And how do you tolerate Ace backstage? That's another question for another podcast. Absolutely. And we got to Andy Moore, or Mao, who sent us another question. Well, a statement, really. He comes across as the bad guy in BWR, but hats off to him for making BWR what it is today. Thank you, Andy, for getting in touch.
Thank you, Andy. And I couldn't do it without the team at BWR. I couldn't do it without the likes of Kay, without the likes of Tyler Devlin, as much as it pains me to say, and without the likes of people like Jimmy McIlwee and this new scene of wrestlers in Grimsby that has come through the feeder school, which is Evo Academy. We've got such a solid team. We've got such a solid base. And honestly, every single show, it blows me away that we just go strength to strength. So shouts out to the BWR team. Mark, Simon, if you are watching this, like, just big ups to you all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I've got to get myself down there and watch a BWR with my own eyes sometime in 2024 for sure. Final question from me. Now, I've seen you kind of work in the ring, Robbie X, Nico Angelo, Mark Haskins, obviously Kira, and one or two others over the years. But who would you say is maybe your one or two favourite opponent of all time? If you were to kind of, you know, narrow it down to your top one, two, or maybe even three, who would be your favourite or top opponents to get in the ring with?
I love stepping in the ring with Robbie. I love stepping in the ring with Robbie, whether that's in a training sense, whether that's on a show. The man's an alien. The man is the best in the country, and soon the world is going to see why Robbie X is the dog's bollocks. Like, he is hands down not only such a good wrestler, but he's a great friend. So yeah, Robbie is definitely up there in my top three. The stuff that I did with Haskins was a huge, huge learning curve for me. And to step, as I say, in the ring with someone of that caliber was incredible, because I got to wrestle Haskins maybe three or four times. One-off opponents, I've mentioned GYV. Mm-hmm. Speedball Mike Bailey for me was and is the match of my career so far. But if we look back to June last year, for a company that shall not be named, I also had the opportunity to wrestle the likes of Frankie Kazarian, Leo Rush, and Zachary Wentz, and that was so fucking cool.
Yeah, absolutely awesome. Absolutely awesome. But we are on a little bit of a time limit today, folks. I want to thank everybody for kind of watching and tuning in and sending in your questions. And apologies if I've not had time to ask your question. But Scotty, if any of my viewers, listeners, followers out there want to get in touch, want to learn more about you, want to reach out to any of your socials, I've got your X and your Instagram scrolling along the bottom of the screen. But where can they get in touch and where can they find out more about Scotty Rourke?
You can follow Scotty Rourke on Instagram, on Twitter. I refuse to call it X. I'm sorry. TikTok, Facebook. And I think across the board, it is just Scotty Rourke. So please, please make yourself known. Give us a cheeky follow. I update Twitter and Instagram all the time. They're my most prominent sort of social medias. And if you wanted to check out the band, we are Intercity Live across all socials.
There we go. But it's been really, really awesome to have you on the show. We've been trying to get this done for a little while now. It's finally happened. But if you've got any final words to sign us off this episode of Wrestling with Jonas to your fans, followers, people that supported you over the years, any final words from Scotty Rourke to sign us off?
Just be kind to yourselves. Honestly, life's hard enough as it is without being your own worst enemy. Look after yourselves, be kind to each other, and self-care is super important.
There we go. But Scotty Rourke, thank you so much for making this happen. And we'll see you at the shows, my friend.
Take it easy.